Trillin hails from Kansas City, which some have called the heart of America. I quickly learned in reading his latest book, Quite Enough of Calvin Trillin, that some had started a move to change the city motto to More Boulevards than Paris, More Fountains than Rome. Yes, Mr. Trillin does report the unusual, all part of his unique way of examining our world. Calvin attended Yale, where he served as chairman of the Yale Daily News. Next came a stint in the U.S. Army. He worked as a reporter for Time magazine, and in 1963 joined the staff of The New Yorker. His reporting for The New Yorker on racial integration of the University of Georgia was published in his first book, An Education in Georgia. He wrote the magazine's U.S. Journal from 1967 to 1982, covering local events both serious and quirky throughout the U.S. These were 3,000-word pieces every 3 weeks from somewhere in the United States on subjects that ranged from the murder of a farmer's wife in Iowa to the author's effort to write the definitive history of a Louisiana restaurant called Didi's, or, quote, to eat an awful lot of baked duck and dirty rice trying. In 1978, Calvin began with a column in The Nation called Variations, which was eventually named Uncivil Liberties and ran through 1985. The same name, Uncivil Liberties, was used for his column when it was syndicated weekly in newspapers from 1986 to 1995. Essentially, the same column then ran without a name in Time magazine from 1996 to 2001. From the July 2, 1990 issue of The Nation to today, Trillin writes his weekly Deadline Poet column, humorous poems about current events. Trillin lives in Greenwich Village, where, according to him, people come from the suburbs on the weekends to test their car alarms. He lectures widely and is often a guest on TV talk shows. Welcome, Calvin. Thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule to speak with me today.
Well, it's nice to be here. Thank you.
I have to ask, first off, you included a piece in the book about killer bagels, and I myself have been a victim of surgery due to a bagel-related injury, so I'm wondering, were you ever wounded by a bagel?
No, I've never been wounded by a bagel. Apparently, it was a problem more in the hinterlands than in New York, where I think emergency room doctor in New York in that piece said to the Times, some of those people were not ethnically equipped to eat bagels.
Well, I'm Jewish, and I ended up in the emergency room, so go figure.
In New York, of course, bagels are considered quite benign. Their stale bagel is famous for being a good teething instrument for children and a good hockey puck for street hockey. So nobody thinks of them as dangerous, I don't think.
All right. You describe deadline poetry as a very small subset of rhyming poetry, and you formed the International Deadline Poets Organization. How did you create this very specialized version, poetry?
Well, I created the organization simply because there was another deadline poet, John Alamang of the Globe and Mail in Toronto. So we came together, and it was hard to get a quorum, but we managed, and we formed the International Deadline Poets, IDPO, we call it. And as far as how I did it, I was inspired by John Sununu, who had not only a wonderful personality for people like me, which is that he was very intent on showing he was the smartest man in the room, but also had this beautiful name, Sununu. And so while he was the chief of staff of George H.W. Bush, I wrote a poem called If You Knew What Sununu. And after that, it just came kind of simply.
And recently, have there been any favorite politicos that you've been rhyming about?
Yeah, I did a poem this week about Newt Gingrich's surge. And Newt's a good rhyme. Gingrich is not too good. And last week I wrote about Kane, and all of the lines rhymed with Kane. That's fairly easy. It's a good rhyme, Kane.
How did you begin writing about food?
Well, I used to do a piece for The New Yorker every 3 weeks somewhere in the country, and most of them were about controversies or murders or something. And at some point, I think it was the Brobridge Crawfish Festival, I realized I could write about the country in a lighter way by writing about eating, even though I don't actually know anything about it. I mean, I'm never reviewed a restaurant, and I don't cook. And I just found something that everybody sort of identified with.
Did you ever make it to dinner at the Oscar de la Renta home?
I'm afraid not. No, I was never invited. I just sat by my phone for a long time.
Okay, as the holiday Christmas season shopping is almost upon us, I was wondering if you could share some of your Christmas in Qatar.
The shopping starts, and every store is a zoo. I'm frantic, too. I haven't got a clue of what to get for Dad, who's got no hobby, or why Aunt Jane, who's shaped like a kohlrabi, wants frilly sweater sets, or where I'll find a tie my loudmouth Uncle Jack won't mind. A shopper's told it's vital he prevails. Prosperity depends on Christmas sales. Can't stop to talk, I say. No time. Can't halt. Economy could fail. Would be my fault. And the chorus is, I'd like to spend some next Christmas in Qatar or someplace else that Santa won't find handy. Qatar will do, although Lord knows it's sandy. I need to get someplace to get to someplace pretty far. I'd like to spend next Christmas in Qatar.
Well, I know that you're on a very exhaustive book tour right now, but what projects are upcoming?
Well, I just closed a New Yorker piece on for the food issue that's actually about the limits of my cooking in Nova Scotia, where I live in the summer, from 3 to 8 dishes, depending on how you count.
Thank you so much for spending some moments with us today.
Thank you.
All right. Bye. All right.